"She's such a show-off," she said from the other room. "She just wants attention. I was making a doll in a sparkly red dress juke about in the doorway to entertain my teenage babysitter and her friends. It didn't have the desired effect. I was about 3 or 4 years old. They were probably 15, and so didn't want to be bothered with dancing dolls. I knew by her tone that a show-off wasn't good. A show-off was a bad person, so I stopped. I stopped and pulled on the knit hat of shyness. I kept my dancing dolls, circuses, radio programming, imaginary television shows, where I was the host, of course, restaurants and beauty parlors, limited to the confines of my bedroom and to the audience of my family when I felt an audience was needed. My family was encouraging. No one ever said, "Who do you think you are, Carol Burnett?" when I did my mud lizard impressions at the dinner table. We all joined the theater together right around when I was 14 or 15, the same age my babysitter was when she called me a show-off. Being among other show-offs, I took off the knit hat. It was stifling under there. The question, "Who do you think you are?" is a really great one if asked without a tone of disapproval. When you erase the tone from it and just allow the question to bring about a thoughtful answer, it is fun to consider, "Who do you think you are?" And it hints at, "Who do you want to be? What are you testing out, trying on, or discovering?" Words of Jenny Hill in a piece titled, "Who Do You Think You Are?" from July 2015. We're about to meet Jenny Hill, the grown-up Jenny Hill, who has held on to a childlike love of play, of performing, of color, and curiosity. In fact, play has been a way for her to explore that fundamental question, "Who do you think you are?" And through her generous spirit, she has invited us along on her quest, ironically working with a dedication and seriousness of purpose, taking risks, working without a net, and yet letting go and trusting the process, embracing the range of human emotion from heartbreak to happiness, from humor to the beauty and ultimately the mystery of what it means to be human. Jenny Hill is a poet, a playwright, and a performing artist who has become a circus-style multi-hoop performer and instructor, hoop as in hula hoop. When she lived here in northeastern Pennsylvania, she could often be found in the park by the Susquehanna River in Wilkes-Barre, hooping and sharing her delight in these colorful plastic circles with passers-by, inviting them to play too. Meanwhile, another creative artist from our region was exercising his eye, all of his senses, in fact, in the service of storytelling in film. And though Al Minnelli hailed from Lackawanna County, and she was here in Luzerne County, the two simply never met. But as their lives unfolded, their paths crossed, and they found each other in Lancaster County, where they both now live and work. And what they have discovered is what they've never, ever lost since childhood, and that is a love of play and that ability of children to ask questions and explore. Poet Richard Lewis puts it this way, "My suspicion now is that this desire to question, as children do, was the beginning of our poetic understanding. By poetic understanding, I do not mean our interest in the craft of poetry. I mean, more generally, that understanding which, from our curiosity, our wonder, and our questions, gave us a bridge to the unknown, to the outer and inner elements of our existence, which we cannot and perhaps we'll never be able to fully comprehend. But it is an understanding which, freeing us from dogmatic and rigid ways of perceiving and knowing, allows us to experience the endlessly evolving ways that we can see and feel the world around us. Words of poet Richard Lewis in Parabola, Fall 1988. Jenny and Al share this poetic understanding of life and the world around them. Filmmaker Al Minnelli has produced a short piece titled One Hoops, centering on Jenny Hill as the final chapter of his Lancaster trilogy, a set of documentary films profiling creative individuals from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Jenny Hill and Al Minnelli paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about the making of One Hoops and the creative process that is so central to their lives. We began by asking how Al came to make movies.
It was a long process. It started as a kid. My parents were very hands-off with what I watched as a kid, so I was watching more mature movies as a 7 and 8 year old, you know, action movies, horror movies, crime thrillers. They really kind of let me watch those things. So I think seeing those types of films at a young age, it was kind of like being in a secret club. You know, a lot of my other friends weren't watching Goodfellas when they were in like fifth grade. So seeing those things, you see different possibilities, you see different avenues, and that sort of just kind of piqued my interest. But I mean, I always liked the kids' movies too, like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and Home Alone and Back to the Future. Like, they were always my favorite movies growing up. So it just kind of started there. And then in high school, in ninth grade, when my parents bought me a video camera for my birthday, from then on, it was pretty much, I know what I want to do. And I would always make films in school for projects instead of write papers. I remember we had to write a paper about Great Expectations. So I was like, can I make a movie? And my teacher didn't really understand why I would want to do that. But I kind of made a musical. So yeah, I have a 30-minute musical from ninth grade with my friends. And we wrote original songs. And that just kind of took off from there.
And did you go on then to study film?
Yes, I got a film degree from Long Island University, my bachelor's. And I was saying this to Jenny on the way here. My parents, I always have to thank them and make sure they get their due diligence. Because most parents, I feel like, if a kid says in high school, like, I want to go to film school, most parents might be like, what? No, you're going to go to get a degree where you're guaranteed a job the second you graduate. But they were just like, okay, yeah, sure, whatever. And it was just full speed ahead.
And you're able to make a living.
Right, correct, yes. I have basically like two full-time jobs, I look at it. Like, I work for Franklin and Marshall College in their marketing department as the video producer, video production manager, and I make all their marketing films, documentaries about alums, highlight videos, stuff like that. On the side, I do things like this, like personal documentaries, but I also do weddings and commercials and, you know, freelance work like that, so it's 24/7 film, and I'm lucky right now because I know, you know, a lot of film majors who aren't doing that type of work, but I got lucky. So right now right now things are good. Yes.
Good. We last spoke with you when you were living here, Jenny, and working, and you had a wonderful studio and doing many things, and you'd go out into Kirby Park and you'd have lots of hoops and you'd invite people to join you. And no matter what it is you've been at this table to talk about, there's been kind of a common theme about the creative process and what it means in the life of a human being. Where did that interest come from, that sense of being open to life and not being afraid in that way to take those risks? Where did that come from?
Oh, that's a great question. I have no idea. But listening to Al talk about how, you know, he's known since he was young that he wanted to be involved in film, making films. I'm always fascinated by people who know what they want to be when they're young. Because I'm 46 years old and I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. Just the world, you know, there's so much in the world that is fascinating and wondrous. And so being curious, I guess, is where that comes from, and loving people.
We see some images of a young Jenny and family in the film. What were the gifts that Mom gave you? What were the gifts that came from Dad?
Both of my parents are very creative. Well, my father was a stained glass artist in his retirement, and he also made dollhouses, which you learn in the documentary. And he would always make our Christmas cards every year, which is a tradition that my mother has carried on even after my father's death. So she now draws the Christmas card every year. Yeah, so both of them were very creative. They encouraged my sister and I to explore and to be curious. And they were never, like Al's parents, they didn't say, no, you can't go to art school. They might not have liked the idea. They may have worried about us. I'm sure they did. They were parents. That's the job of a parent, is to worry. But they were always very supportive.
You've tried so many things, and you've been able to find a medium for this exploration. You write plays, you perform, and yet you say you haven't really settled on what you want to do when you grow up.
It's the exploration that's so interesting to me. I'm especially excited when the things that I am researching, the things that I'm exploring, connect. Or I can find a way to make them connect, like hooping and poetry. Or when I'm writing a play and suddenly I'm obsessed with the movement that's happening on stage, you know, and whether or not it's a circular path or, you know, things like that. So I get very excited when those things intersect and my brain makes those connections.
And that's the perfect moment to ask how you, Jenny, and Al, and your paths intersected.
I've said this to a few different people, and I'm interested. We've never actually spoken about it, but from my point of view, what happened was I made this short film called Juggle about a married couple who are jugglers and clowns in Lancaster. And Jenny knew them, Jason and Kate Horst, and she friended me on Facebook. But we didn't really physically meet. It was just kind of one of those, like, it was almost like a networking thing. Like, oh, yeah. You like arts? I like arts. Let's be friends. But we didn't talk. There was never, like, an email, or there was none of that. And I don't even know, like, do you even remember seeing Juggle?
I remember watching it.
Okay.
And loving it. Yeah. Dan and I watched it on the TV in the living room.
But do you remember, being gorgeous. Like, oh, I'm going to, like, see who this Al...
Yeah.
Is,
oh, yeah. Okay. Absolutely. So. I watched some of his other films. Some of the ones that you made when you were younger. The Time Traveler.
Time Travel Boy. Made in Northeast PA. Yeah. We shot a lot of it at the Circle Drive-In. It's a silent film. It's about 13 minutes. It's kind of like a throwback to, you know, Chaplin and Keaton and those guys. So it's kind of interesting. We never really spoke about that pre-Facebook friendship, but that's sort of what happened. I don't know if you've ever seen Jenny's Facebook posts or social media posts, but they're very interesting. Like, it's not just like, oh, I'm going to the store to get bread. You know, it's not that stuff. It's actual, like, she poses questions and they're like interesting thoughts, you know, that one would have. And they kind of piqued my interest. And so there's some interesting depth to her here. And the visual obviously hit me as well. She would post striking photos, close-ups of her face with makeup on it. Little videos of her hooping in the morning, practicing. And, you know, I just thought, well, hula hooping is interesting. But it's funny, and I don't know if I've told you this, but I kept convincing myself not to pursue making this film. You know, and it seems like you didn't know that.
I did not know that.
Because I had made Juggle, and then I had made Man with Puppet, which was the second in this sort of trilogy of Lancaster documentaries. And Man with Puppet is about Robert Brock and his marionette theater in Lancaster. And I was like, man, I've done two. Like, I don't want to do a third, like, performing artist. But Jenny just kept drawing me in. Like, there were so, like, your posts just kept intriguing me. And I don't know if you realize it or not, but there's a lot of interesting things there. Like, I was connecting to you so much through, you know, the things you were saying, and I was agreeing with them, and I could see a lot of myself in the way you sort of thought about things. So I just said, all right, I'm doing it. And
then what happened?
You know, I'd done those two movies. I was like, I want to do something different. I want to do something where people are cursing or things are blowing up or just something completely 180. And I mean, at the base of it, what I like to do with movies is, you know, I think Jenny's film is like exactly my style and my tone. That sort of whimsical side of things, the childlike nostalgia of life It's what's fascinating to me. And I saw that in her. And then especially after we met at a coffee shop and just talked, and I could just sense that. And you could sense that there's an interesting dichotomy to Jenny, which I hope comes across in the film. She's not very, like, 100% of the time super quirky. And I set it up that way, like the beginning, the montage, and, you know, you're kind of thinking, oh, this is going to be super quirky fun. But I wanted people to actually see the other side of it, the mundane side of it, being at home and you know, picking out a grocery list of cheese and lettuce or whatever, you know, like those are the things that to me are just interesting. You know, I like seeing that side of things.
While standing there in costume, however.
Yes, exactly. And that again goes with like the theme of, you know, you would see her sometime costumed in such a whimsical, fantastical way. And then, you know, the surroundings are the exact opposite. So like seeing her backstage at the children's elementary school. You know, the whole end, the sort of climax, as I call it, in Penn Square in Lancaster when she's doing the performance. You know, there's all these just people in regular clothes. It's not like some big set with lights. It's a downtown. It's a city. And just that dichotomy of things is what sort of intrigued me. I saw multiple sides and layers to Jenny. And it's just funny saying this with her sitting right next to me. Because normally I'm saying this and she's nowhere around, so it's fun to have her hear me dissect her in a way.
It's a beautiful dance, that sense of you're seeing her beauty and her complexity in a way that is in no way sentimental, and using those things like the home movies to make it richer in that way and give it a context. Well, we'll get to the end when you're reflecting on the process and you say, even then, you can't begin to capture the mystery of a person, even in this beautiful way that Al has treated it. But it's just, yes, and there's so much more. It helps us celebrate what it means to be human, and I think we can take that away. Yes, what it means to be Jenny Hill and to have the privilege of meeting her this way, but we take it away like, wow, being human is amazing.
That is the goal. And Jenny and I have spoken in the scene when she cries and she's talking about that story about her daughter. You know, I've heard a few people have asked me, you know, what is she crying about? You know, like why is she crying? And I think it's interesting. It's more interesting that we don't really know. I think you subconsciously put a reason on it to passively get to the next scene. But if someone stopped and asked you why, I don't think you can answer the question legitimately. It would be whatever you put on it. And I think that draws kind of people in to pay attention a little bit more. But I also think it reveals that there's so much going on inside of Jenny. Like, you know, what really did, why did she get upset? And it's funny, I was telling her, I was like, it's kind of, I view the slanty shanty, the house, as kind of Jenny's Rosebud in a way.
So, and for people who are too young to remember Rosebud or not film buffs, just explain what you mean by
Rosebud. Rosebud is from Citizen Kane, and I almost feel bad spoiling it if you haven't seen Citizen Kane. It's what the whole movie is about, but ultimately you should, you know, if you haven't seen it, whatever. It's his sled from his childhood, and his dying words are Rosebud. And the whole movie is this mystery about what is Rosebud, and they find out, well, no one finds out. Which is great. That's what I love about the end of Citizen Kane, is nobody finds out what Rosebud is except the audience, because the sled burns in the fire. And it's kind of perfect in a way, because the sled is this nostalgic memory of his childhood, whereas this house is a nostalgic memory of her daughter's childhood, but also like a younger time in your life, you know? Like it was, what was it, the 90s, right? Probably early 90s, maybe?
Yeah.
So to me, the slanty shanty is her Rosebud. So that's all that kind of, that's what I attribute it to.
Does it resonate with you in that way?
Yeah, it does. It does. I don't want to give away why I cry.
But you've trusted his editing choices.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It was very interesting to watch another artist at work every day when I was the subject of that artist's work. You know, sort of like, I don't know, holding up a mirror to a mirror to a mirror, you know, like looking back and seeing. And I had no idea where he was headed. He was there filming, and, you know, he asked a lot of questions, and we had a lot of email exchanges. So I wasn't sure what he was making. And we were talking in the car on the way here, and I said, I was thinking recently, we were talking about Knoebels.
The amusement resort.
Yes. Fun food and fantasy. And I was thinking about that haunted house and how, like, this project was like being in that haunted, you know, making the decision to sit down in that car and then you're on a track, but you don't know what's going to be around the corner. And it's exhilarating and it's risk-taking. And, you know, you can either open yourself up to it or you can be all closed off and terrified the whole time. So I loved the whole process.
I didn't see that coming either. Like, you getting as emotional as you did. Like, I remember I was sitting there and watching you, and then all of a sudden it's like you just, your face just does this, like, shift. And I remember being like, oh my God, is she gonna, is this affecting her? And I remember being like, all right, I'm rolling, right? But someone once said that the greatest special effect that you could have in a movie is a close-up of a person's face when they realize something. It's better than any, like, you know, ILM CGI thing out there. It's a close-up of a human discovering something new, some new information, or having something. And we have that in this film. We have it for real. Like, she is, you're legitimately watching her face kind of shift into this sort of nostalgic, melancholic, I don't really know what to, because I don't know what she's really feeling, so.
What did you learn? What kinds of insights did you get about what an artist does? I mean, you've been doing it yourself for so long, living that life, but did you get any insights into the creative process as you watched Al and experienced this interchange that you had?
Yeah, well, I mean, Al was always very polite and professional about, you know, making sure that he was on time, and that's all the business of art making, I think, you know, showing up when he said he was going to show up, being on time and making sure that, you know, he wasn't in the way or he wasn't overstepping a bound, you know, a boundary. I noticed mm-hmm. that he was always very careful about that.
The ending was a big issue with that, yeah.
Yeah. Was it okay for him to film in our apartment or that sort of thing? Checking in and to see what events were coming up. In particular, there was a show that I was supposed to be doing in Philadelphia, The 5-Minute Follies, which is a great variety show that I've visited a number of times, and I was developing a new act for it, and Al had even done a considerable amount of footage of rehearsal for that act, and it had a little bit to do with social media and cell phones and all of that. So I think he was pretty excited about the upcoming production and act, and I injured my ankle rehearsing it because it was a very high energy. There were parts of it that were very high energy. I had been bouncing, jumping up and down on that ankle, and I emailed him and I said, I'm sorry, but I had to cancel this show. I feel terrible for the producer of the show. Now he's got to scramble and find somebody to fill, and I'm sorry, but, you know, we're not going. And I know that that was not an easy email for him to receive.
It was soul crushing, to say the least. It was the finale. It was my ending.
I didn't know that, though. I didn't know that that was his ending. Like I said, I had no idea where he was going with everything. I figured he had some sort of story arc planned, but so I stepped all over it there. And the fact that you didn't say, well, you've just crushed my...
No, I made a point not to admit that, oh, this was my big ending. I told her after the fact. You know, when I devised a new one.
Yeah.
but I didn't want her to feel obligated or bad. You have to form a relationship with the person you're doing a documentary about. And I do a lot of them, even for Franklin and Marshall, Up Out alums, current students, you know, whoever. You have to have a relationship with this person. You know, I like to text them. I like to have the ability to be, okay, it's 9 o'clock at night, I have an idea or a question, I just want to text them real quick. And so I like that kind of openness and that availability. So I made it a point to not ever try to, like, piss you off in a way.
I would have been very upset that I had upset you, you know, and because it was your work that I had upended, you know, so that's kind of another thing that I had, I guess, a takeaway from.
You mentioned, Jenny, about the things, for example, that attract you as you're working on a play, for example, you get involved in the movement and there's a, is it a circle? Is that what's the movement is? And heaven knows with hoops, we get circles and we're drawn in immediately, those images of the circles and your hands on the circles, and it's striking and it draws us right in that way. But to what extent does the circle, the hoop in real life, in your film, to what extent is that a metaphor for something?
Well, you know, the phrase circle of life, you know, comes to mind. And Jenny's daughter in the film is very much her. She's not in the film very much, but there's that one segment where you see them together. And it's very clear they are sort of doppelgangers for each other. And you see them sort of running together down a sort of back alley with that little, what was that thing? Some kind of like birthday it was balloon or something?
Yeah, it was a $5, yeah, a big giant balloon that Helen got for me. Yeah.
So that, but then it's like, okay, their birthdays are very close to each other. They were blowing out the same candles on the same cake together. And they stood opposite each other. So that sort of mirroring between them and the fact that her daughter is entering into creative endeavors as well. She redid her dad's dollhouse, right? And that's ultimately what gets Jenny to start getting a little upset and cry. So I definitely see that sort of relationship, that circle where they are very similar to each other. And there's definitely a legacy there, so to me, I mean, when you started talking, that was what popped into my head.
How about the hoops and your life and your circle path on the stage? And any reverberations there with circles?
Yeah, I mean, I spend enough time inside of them. And I feel like a recurring image for me, my uncle, Uncle George, my mom's brother, when I was a little girl, he came and visited, and we lived near a lake, and he taught me how to skip rocks. And you have to find the nice flat, you know, the flattest, the thinnest stone to get it to skip across the surface. And I remember watching him do this and him teaching me, and I was not very successful. They just would plop in. But his stones would just skitter across the surface of the water, and then the circles, the ripples on the surface would just go outward. And there's something about that, about those circles that kind of compound and go outward, that it keeps coming back to me as a metaphor, as a visual metaphor, I guess. It's just kind of back there and is probably part of the reason I'm always trying to include others or find a project that ripples out, you know, that reaches more people. And there's a part, I know that this was filmed, but it didn't make it in, where I was talking. I was practicing in the morning at the Y, and Al was filming, and you were there for the whole practice session, and I got all sweaty and I was practicing with a bunch of hoops, and there is some footage from that practice session in the documentary. But you had asked me some question. I don't even remember now what the question was. And for some reason, I'm in the middle of, you know, like four or five hula hoops doing some core drill. And I talked a lot during that. And I surprised myself. I remember going home after that session and thinking, I was really exerted, you know, that's a lot of movement, and I was able to talk, and why was I able to speak like that? But I remember one of the things that I said was, because it surprised me, was it's taken me to become inside all of these circles to feel so free, or something like that, you know, like I'm encapsulated, I'm surrounded by all of these circles, and I've found freedom in that, which seems like a dichotomy. I didn't continue with the dichotomy. I definitely wasn't thinking straight enough to use that word. But it is that way for me. When you see video of me hooping, I am usually trapped inside five or six, or, you know, if I'm doing a stack, a whole stack of 20, I'm inside this little universe, you know, my own little universe. But it's, you know, it's as a kid, I never felt that free, that finding movement, finding a voice. My body has a voice, you know, and it took a hula hoop, a silly plastic circle, for me to be able to open up like that.
Jenny Hill, poet, playwright, and performing artist, and Al Minnelli, filmmaker and producer of the short documentary film One Hoops, described in these words. Jenny Hill unleashes her imagination on Lancaster with some hula hoops and a little bit of creativity. It's the final piece in his Lancaster trilogy. You can see the film without charge online, MonelliFilms.com, M-O-N-E-L-L-I, MonelliFilms.com. It's One Hoops, centering on creative artist Jenny Hill. And to see the film, you can go online to MonelliFilms.com, MonelliFilms.com.